Okay, that's Omar Khayrat, world-famous Egyptian composer, who someone sent me the link. I think it was Beverly, and or the Swedish person, Ira, I can't remember which, said that there was a Zappa connection to this Omar-composed music. The piece is called Fatma, F-A-T-M-A, I think it was. F-A-T-M-A, right. And before that, a little from the Northerlies, who we featured at the beginning of the Bob Fest. And before that, John Coltrane doing Blue Train. Now, where is everybody? Web control. Unmute. Mute everybody.
All participants are now unmuted.
Couple of messages. Sean from the United Kingdom says, quoting me, I guess, broadcasting what previously was held secretly by oligarchs. Yes, I said that 20 minutes ago. Then he says, that's where you're a great example, Bob, usher of the mystery landscape, demonstrating a much more comprehensive and wise way to do power. That means mortar, public power, plus keeping it fun, too. What more could be asked? And a smiley. And then Cider Somerset says, he seems to say he put up a thread on Avalon. Is that Project Camelot's forum, January 2012. I think this is what he wrote back then. What the Illuminati know about ETs and human evolution. This video presentation is from the 1999 UFOCon conference. A young-looking 77-year-old Bob presents from Illuminati documentation. A must-watch to add to education, in my humble opinion. Signed, Steve. I think Steve wrote that back almost 2 years ago, posted on the Avalon site. Then he says, this bloody chat is so sensitive, it posts before I have finished. Laughing out loud. This bloody chat is so sensitive, I post before, I don't know, something about that. Something about what we're doing here. Zen woman says, diamond and daimon are Latinized versions of the Greek, and she gives the Greek letters, and it's a reference to the diamonds of ancient Greek religion and mythology, but interestingly also used in the computer programming realm. Good comment from our interverse, actually. So she's liking what, Mindfuck saying, demons from innerverse. And then, what's next? Cider Somerset post the Project Camelot thing, the link to, I guess, the January 2012 posting about my talk in Mesquite, Nevada. Zen woman says, so I was up around 5 a.m. and caught most of the Evergreen segments. I'll call in at some point. Thanks, all. Then Mindfuck says, yes, Zen woman. Then Zen woman says, oh, sorry, Innerverse, per comment earlier. Innerverse is good, MF. Innerverse is good, MF. Mindfuck, MF. Okay, so anybody anything to say before we go to the next part of the Evergreen session? Nothing? Are you guys there sitting there consciously making sure you don't say anything?
Yes.
Answer. Yeah, yes. Okay. You want me to carry on. Okay, here we go. All right, I'm muting everyone.
All participants are now muted.
This should be it. This is session, continuing session from April 18th, 1995.
The mechanical. If you were to move teeth, it's not that hard when you know how.
Is it done by injections?
Infusions, yes.
What do you mean infusions?
The best description is that terminology is inexact because there is no present-day terminology to form this. But the...
Was there a technology that touched the ape, the Neanderthal? Was there any contact? You know what I mean?
As far as Neanderthals were concerned, with only certain branches of the Neanderthals. So a majority of them now.
No, what I meant was that the technology that was used by the Boudians, did it touch the bodies of the Neanderthals when they did that?
Well, yes.
You said, oh, and then yes.
In the touching, yes.
Yeah, so there was some apparatus.
Yes.
All right. Now, in that old reading, it was this operation of the wrist, they said, created the subconscious in us.
It was part of. If you'd say that any alteration of a species that breeds true, and if you know from prior knowledge what shifts are going to be done from an alteration, then you would see that the functions of the organism as a totality alter, which would include the thinking processes, which would include even to the uses of the mind, that the mind would shift into the bicameral. But first there must be the creation of an opportunity to do it. You see, if you were to take a great ape these days, a gorilla of the gorilla family, and you find a way of teaching that gorilla to use a typewriter, but first you must have him understand what the keys are. Not only that he can be depressed and that there would be an impression made on paper, but what is an A? What is a B? Why is the necessity of an A, a B, and a C? Why is that there an alphabet? So you go back one step. And you keep on going backwards and backwards until you can make a small change that will have a significant point. That then the gorilla would ask for a typewriter, or would think of a typewriter, or would invent a typewriter. But you just go back, you see. Not so much as teaching the great ape Anslam that he would be able then to show his words with hand motions. You have, of course, changed great apes forever if you teach enough great apes that they teach their children and their children teach their children, and they begin to then form an expansion, an addition to the original that they were taught, and they become highly adept at sign language. Now, consider this. If you take the great ape, teach this great ape sign language, and at the same time alter the DNA of the great ape so that sign language becomes a dominant factor, within a number of generations, the great ape will have an extensive sign language. Now, from that, several things. His mind would have shifted. He will no longer spend as much time on his four legs, because you would need them for talking, communicating. So then you had a tendency to stand upright more often. And different pressures would be placed on the pelvis. And across a number of generations, a number of shifts, this would be an upright gorilla.
Right.
But how long were you willing to wait? if you were going to wait for a Neanderthal to work into a thinkingness that would allow surviving, then not only would you wait a long time, there is no time for the Neanderthal, because the Neanderthal dies out. He does not have the capability. It was not that the Cro-Magnon forced out the Neanderthal. The Neanderthals were vicious. They could survive. They could fight. But they could not think. And it was the Cro-Magnons that outthought them. Left, right, and center.
Did they fight each other at some point?
The Cro-Magnons had a tendency to run away because they were faster.
So, in this transition period, the man has arrived, and it now has to interact with the not-yet-man, but the not-yet-man gradually dwindles.
Yes.
So they had to hide from not-yet-man's violence.
Yes.
Yes. That's neat. All right, when were the famous Lascaux cave drawings done? Lascaux?
Yes, yes. But these are approximately 20. These are 19,000.
So it's. Did the society. Why were they done in caves? That's a mystery.
No, it's very, very evident. You are protected in a cave system. Always. You're better protected in a cave system. You are out in the open.
Were these cave drawings prayers to get animals to come for hunting, or were they rituals?
They were a part of the ritual of the life that more expressed continuance. You see,
wasn't for hunting?
To a degree, hunting. But to a degree as a language that was more understood as time goes by. But
in our time or among them?
Among them.
Yeah.
You see that with a petroglyph, you can give a picture. If you're in a society that is ideographic, then pictures become very important because they supply and imply information. In an information necessity society, you will find that there is a language. Depend upon the need of information, or the need of information within those groupings was here, yes, there, no. Maps were not even thought of. As a planar view, a map was a horizontal view. So these are, in part, maps. But the terminology is very different than that which you would buy from an ESOC map.
Did they have ESP, these people at the 19,000 BC?
Yes. They were intuitive, because it was either survive or not. Those who have the tendency towards muscular development, a food gathering ability, a lack of injury, a propensity to heal quickly, a propensity to not catch certain illnesses, there would be a stronger immune system and the like, that the intuitive function was also a survival function. The intuitive, and let me assure you, the Neanderthal was lacking in intuition. While the Neanderthal lacked in intuitiveness, made up in viciousness.
All right. Now, the Cro-Magnon man. Developed burial rituals, or were Neanderthal men doing burial rituals? or some kind of burial rites.
Mm. And the burial rites were rudimentary, to say the least, because they did not bury. They would put the deceased out of the way. It's because of a convenience. But you see, a person who is cast of clay in your society is an object of burial. In a Neanderthal society, it's a source of food. And so the burial functions of the Neanderthals was get the body out of the way and oftentimes eat it.
Yes.
So now realize that, and this has been shown in more recent studies of cannibalism, that what would appear to be the best portions of the human body are the parts of the body that have the most toxins in them. Now, not that the Neanderthals lived in a toxic society, far from it, but they did live in a society where certain diseases did exist, and many of these affected the brain. And the brain, as delicious as it could be, was oftentimes that which caused problems within those that did eat brain. So, from that, the Neanderthals would cut the head off, save the head. So therefore it became a head-saving society. Not all of it, some. The rest was edible. Now, it was not that the Cro-Magnon had any greater ethics as concerned to death, but that the Cro-Magnon ate better and there was not the necessity of cannibalism, though cannibalism did exist in the early Cro-Magnon. You will only have a burial concept in a society when you do not need the bodies for food.
Okay, we come to the end of side one. We have to move this forward. Come to the end of side one.
Any society could form its own means of accomplishing a variety of foods does not then view...
I'm going to rewind that slightly. Okay, that should be it.
Society could form its own means of accomplishing a variety of foods does not then view the human body as a source of available protein.
So the burial, the idea of a religious burial, as we understand it, a sense of a sacred memory comes in with Cro-Magnon man.
Yes, and much later.
I'm going to rewind it. This pulsing sound, some of the discs have this pulsing sound. The guy who dubbed it, I don't know why that happens, but that's a problem later into these discs. It seems to start pulsing, but you seem to be able to make it out. I want to rewind that, get a better transition.
Cannibalism. Though cannibalism did exist in the early Cro-Magnon. You will only have a burial concept in a society when you do not need the bodies for food. Any society that could form its own means of accomplishing a variety of foods does not then view the human body as a source of available protein.
So the burial, the idea of a religious burial, as we understand it, a sense of a sacred memory comes in with Cro-Magnon man.
Yes, and much later. becomes important. You see, one of the aspects of the Neanderthals was that they were linked very tightly in small, very small, territorial groupings. If they could live within a particular grove of trees, they would live within that grove of trees, because they would be able to eat, there would be certain weather protection, etc., etc. The Cro-Magnon had a tendency to move outwards. They were not as territorially designed, nor did the societies reflect, but there was still territoriality in it.
Okay, now.
Now, notice that if you bury your ancestors in the ground, you own the ground.
Oh.
That was the reason for the burial processes of the Cro-Magnons. But if you bury the wise in an area, you own the area. It's yours.
The wise being W-I-S-E?
W-I-S-E, yes. The older ones.
Right.
The ones who survived and were able to teach, were able to fashion better tools. These ones, when they cast off clay, rather than use them as available food, they were used as position markers in a territorial area of large territory. And you will find that the concept of sacred ground is the concept of territory.
And also ancestor worship.
Ancestor worship is territory.
Right.
And claims to territory.
Right. Okay. I have an interesting question. The entity, the consciousness that's in the Cro-Magnon man, when it dies, does it become aware of all its lives as we think now of humans? And
yes.
Is
that, yes.
When that began?
No, long before this.
So when a Neanderthal died, the entity, the consciousness within a Neanderthal, that violent thing, would come out, and if they're, and they would go through the death process that I will go through, the same thing, and become aware of their kind of spirit lives.
Of course.
Now that's interesting, isn't it?
Absolutely, because you see, you must understand that, that if you look at the totality of yourself as a spiritual entity, of all of your existences, then you would view the Neanderthal and say, yes, that was a viciousness. There's no other word for it but vicious. But that's what a Neanderthal does. You don't expect the Neanderthal to lift his teacup with his little finger raised, because it's not that there were no teacups, it was that the concept of interactiveness at that more modern level was not even a concept.
But they did correlate that if they ate the brains of the person who was dead, that they got sick.
Yes. They were not fools, but they were not sent for survival.
Right. So when spirit an earlier millennia inhabited Iraq and was a rock for millions of years, and then it would have to remove itself from the rock.
Yes.
And then it would be a consciousness that says, oh, I have all these lives, and I've just sort of put myself in that little terrestrial prison to see what it was like.
Yes.
I see. And that goes back to the whole time stuff we've done in previous readings.
Yes.
All right. Now, I'd like to, there's only a while left, I have a question. Should I ask about wave sign, the wavelength theory, like Dardic, and how that relates to spiral signs, or should I ask, in relevance to this reading, for a description of the Bhutis, how they look? You've given it in old readings, but they're blonde. They look like white people, I think you said, when they interacted with the South Americans.
Yes, but they're also black when they interacted with the Africans.
Do they can change their features?
They can change their appearances necessarily.
Oh, so it's science fiction like the Bhutians.
Yeah.
So
if you would see the Bhutians as chameleon...
Shapeshifters.
Not shapeshifters.
Chameleons.
More chameleon-like.
They adapt to who they're communicating with.
Very much so.
So,
because their society is based on this necessity of of communications. Now, consider this. You're an educated person. You have a good vocabulary. That's more than adequate, far more than adequate of the normal, quote, normal person. You have a need for an extensive vocabulary. Certain others do not. If you'd hear your ability to describe something and a certain less educated person describing something, that your description would be recognizable and cognizable, while a person of lesser education would create a relatively confusing description. Now, to the Bootians, that is the greatest sorrow of all times, that a person does not have an extensive vocabulary and an extensive grammar. Bootian grammar is not complex, but is extremely rich. And the vocabulary, well, the best description is, you know that the Inuit have many names for snow because they have many needs of many names because of conditions and the need to travel. If you would see that concept carried into all things, there you would find basically the Bootian philosophy. The communication level can be easily manipulated downwards, very, very hard upwards. So therefore, they are at much of a peak of communication and communication skills. The additional aspects of communication are travel and movement of individuals. So naturally, from where the Bootians themselves were, to give a gift of travel, to give a gift of communication, this was the greatest gift that they could give, because it replicated their needs. But they were wise enough to realize that this is a different place.
Yes. When we have contact with them, will they speak English to us?
Yes, of course. English, Swahili, Chinese, Russian, all of these are variants on communication. And all one needs is to learn the grammar and the words. And if you are adept, then it takes no time to learn another language.
So are they going to look relatively like us? I think in the old readings, everybody described the Bootians as bifurcated.
Yes.
What did that mean in that particular?
That they are upright, walk on their hind legs, they do not use their forelegs for locomotion.
You mean they walk like us?
Yes.
Yeah. And they will have skin the same texture as we have for this meeting?
Somewhat.
Now,
you see, if it mattered, then they would. But if a society reaches a point where it doesn't matter, then you will accept an ambassador that is purple.
Right. In other words, they will adapt themselves within the limits of what they think we can stand.
Yes.
But they want to be a little different, so we have a sense that they are something exotic from far away.
To a degree. But realize that one of the objectives of any civilization, and this is true of all civilizations and not on this world, all civilizations need to grow to the point where there are no strangers. So at the basic philosophy and the philosophical level, there are no strangers.
Right.
There are none. So therefore, as this society grows more and more towards realizing there are no strangers, then you can accept strangers, because they're no longer strangers. They're but partners from a different place.
Right, and we... So I'm getting images of popular science, Star Trek kind of, someone who can change shape. I mean, they're not the real science fiction images of, no. of that mind nest, a beehive, I can't remember the name, the blob or something, the glorp, that's some kind of part in the Star Trek script. The what? Yeah, it's... But we, as we get to know them, we will start to see how they are chameleons and how they can...
And how they differ.
And how they dematerialize themselves, so if they
how,
want to.
Now, that's a technology. And technology is technology and easily learned. But the point is, if they are accepted as the way that they demonstrate themselves, and that this then progress, then you find how vastly different other societies can be, vastly different.
Yes.
Based upon things that would seem to make absolutely no sense, but they work.
So that they will unfold them, what they are over time.
Yes.
Yeah.
You see, if you look at popular science fiction, it's an extension of what is here.
Yes.
It does not show the absolute strangeness that exists there. But only when you can accept that strangeness can you be a part of it.
When you say the strangeness there, you mean in the universe or in the
universe?
Movie?
In the universe.
Yeah.
The strangeness. One person had it correct when he said, it's not only wilder than your imagination can think, it's wilder than that.
All right.
There's approximately 1.5 minutes.
All right, then. You had a question, Ellie? Let me think. When did the Ice Age end?
Between 7,000 and 9,000 years before the coming of the Nazarene. It depends upon if you look at the majority of the when there was the retreat of the ice cap that then began to expose more, you find that that is between 7,000 and 11,000 years. It varies from place to place to place.
Right. Are the Boodians interested in Irving Dardick's theory of cycles? Do they think that that will lead into their kind of thinking?
It's not that they're interested in any particular thing. What they're interested in is the totality. Where does a society go that survives? They knew, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that in the end of those would die out. The opportunities that would be created for the Cro-Magnon in different areas. Some would live, some would not. But the probability of survival was then improved. Well, this society is still in its probabilities. Will this society survive? We say it does, because we see that it does. But mankind must reach a point where he can see that there are no strangers. Well, does that theory work towards this area? It's part of it.
When a Bootian dies, he goes into the same spirit I go into when I die.
Yes, and you realize then that there is then from that a strangeness.
Yeah, because we on spirit have not talked to their souls in spirit, I understand. There's no communication between their heaven, so to speak, and our heaven.
There are and there aren't.
Yeah, we will now that we will make contact, it will begin, but up to this point there has not been.
Now we see what there has been. What we see is, it's a mind is a mind. It's trying to grasp what that mind is. The spirit is a spirit. They are not cookie-cuttered. They are the products of existence. But if there is no common ground, if there is no basis of formation in which there can be even discussion, there must be an agreement as to the language and what the language means.
But
and some of that information is of no use in this particular spiritual state. Some of it is. That has to be worked out. And now this must end.
I just wanted to ask one thing. You had started to struggle, I guess, to find the words to describe the technology of the genetic alteration. And could you leave a trigger with Michael?
Yes.
Please, thank you. Okay, so unless there's any further comments, shall we end the session?
Please.
Thank you. Dear Lord, please enfold these entities in my love and my perfection. Amen. Please clear any negative influences from the entities now.
Done.
Allow the body to become completely relaxed, to perform any healing which may need to be performed. Begin increasing the blood pressure to normal, naturally, and begin returning all other systems of the body to normal, naturally, now.
Done.
Thank you for our session. And
we do thank you. To you both. God's blessing.
Thank you, Reverend. Same to you. And now I would like Michael to awaken feeling completely refreshed, relaxed, and loved now.
Came out of that session, I had to ask Bob, was it this session, any previous session, when I gave Bob standing next to a Neanderthal in a museum setting, it was just a mock-up, and I was scared out of my wits, and saying, if you knew what this guy was like, you wouldn't be within 150, 200 feet of the guy, and you'd be running away, because they're dangerous.
And there are museums with those statues.
Yeah,
I don't know if I've seen any. I can't remember.
Yeah, I think anthropological museums have, you know, this is a Neanderthal, this is a Cro-Magnon, this is a whatever.
But somehow a topic came up, you had this impression, you're like dreaming that you could see what they were.
Yeah, I could see what they were.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing is, and it came out of this particular session, with seeing a group of Neanderthals, and they had a grove of trees and grasses, and it was about, I'd say about 5-10 acres, about 10 acres, something like that, covered 10 acres. Eating was pretty good. Well, there was nuts and berries and this sort of thing, and grasses. They ate a lot of grass, a lot of grass. They were almost foragers. They were almost bovine. They didn't bring up a cud or anything like that, but they ate a lot of fiber. A lot of cellulose, should I say. A lot of it.
Would they excrete all over the place? Was there any, did you notice, was there any toiletry?
Well, it was like any other area. You don't foul your own nest.
Right.
But you, it's not that clean. I mean, it was clean-ish, but I'd say that modern-day pigs have if you give a pig enough area, they'll all have a tendency to crap in one area and keep things clean that way. But somewhat like that.
Yeah.
Well, I'd say that the Neanderthal had about the intelligence of a pig. About that. It was not very bright at all. Saw that.
And they look like we, as we imagine, these sort of ape-like guys.
Yeah, they were predominantly, very powerfully ape-like. But the apes themselves were shifting. They were long-nosed apes, long-jawed apes, should I say, long-jawed apes, and there were shorter-jawed apes. And it was the shorter-jawed apes that became the Neanderthal. And then from Neanderthal, changes in that. Now, how do you describe...
You saw this group with the trees.
I saw this group on the trees, and they'd foraged out of it, but they tried to stay in that area as much as they could. They were extremely, you move into that area, you're dead.
Yeah.
That's dead. If you're not a part of that grouping.
I mean, if you're another Neanderthal tribe?
If you're another Neanderthal coming into that area, there's no Pax Romana or Pax Neanderthalis.
It's all, that's it.
That's the stranger theme that at the end of the reading.
Mm-hmm.
If you were a stranger from the beginning.
Oh, yes.
You were nailed.
Nailed and fried. chomped on.
Did you see them eating skulls or avoiding the skulls and all that?
They were there. They would take protein. They weren't that great protein eaters, I have to tell you that. They were not. Their gut was more associated to cellulose. And fiber to a greater extent. I mean, the appendix was fully functioning. I mean, the little vestigial thing that we have, they had a fully functioning appendix that enabled them to eat cellulose.
Now, could you see the innards?
Uh-huh.
I mean, are you just...
No, I just knew that.
You just
knew
know.
What they're looking at.
Yeah.
I said, you know, said to myself, my God, these guys eat a lot of grass.
Yeah.
Leaves, you know. Well, they ate ferns and all that something. That was that. With Cro-Magnon, now, how did I do this? Because I saw something very different. Is I saw... No. I saw... I have to say a machine, and I'm wrong.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, I saw a machine that in the light that came off this machine, things became malleable. Okay? I could then move things which were not able to be moved otherwise. In other words, if I shone the light on this microphone that I have here, I could rearrange it with my fingers, draw it out.
Oh, it would become plastic?
Putty. It would become plastic. It would become malleable, yeah.
And you touch it and shape it.
And shape it. Under this light.
Yeah.
Now, under this light, you could also move flesh. You could move flesh and bone. And it's exceptionally good for setting a bone if you want to. If you've got a broken bone, you can set it. But they did it, and they were some people. I think the Buddhians, I think. I'll have to say that. But they shone this light, and they moved the jaw.
With the machine.
Not necessarily, they didn't use their hands. The whole damn thing was done by the machine, almost to a pattern.
Right.
Programmed in the pattern.
It would move the material.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Move the material of the jaw, and then imprint in it. This is where you're...
Return
to this. Nothing. You don't go back to this. This is now...
This is the mold.
This is the mold.
They release it, would go back to where it was, and it would grow towards that.
And it would grow towards it, and it would... Well, it would be mostly shaped. There'll be little growth left. But what happens then is that it's in the structure of the DNA.
Adults or children or?
How long do you think they lived? If they lived to 25 years old, and we're talking ancient lives here.
Yeah.
19 was. By the time you get about 19, you're getting old. The number of generations. We figure what now, 25 years is a generation. This was about less than 15. Because the females, as soon as the females came into heat, they were pregnant. I mean, that was it. I mean,
they'd be around 11 and 12, I guess.
Sooner. Yeah, but you know, they came into heat and were pregnant. And that was where it was. But the thing about it was the Cro-Magnon was growing straighter. He was growing straighter, and he was quite straight. And the brain capacity, his food intake shifted. He wasn't eating grasses. He was eating much wider variety of foods. And because he was having such a wide variety of foods, he had more area to cover. He was literally by that necessity. And that, believe it or not, is, okay, to me, that is the expulsion of it from the Garden of Eden. Because everything was supplied in the Garden of Eden.
The Garden of Hell.
Yeah, the Garden of Hell, yeah. But the Garden of Eden had everything supplied.
Right, within their needs.
Within their needs. And then they ate of what they should not have eaten, and then they were cast out of Eden. That's, you know, the biblical part. Then from Neanderthal, which is more Edenish, you know, staying within specific 10-acre, 20-acre areas, very, very small groupings, very small, then moving into much larger territories because your diet shifted.
They developed new needs, therefore they need more satisfaction, which was harder to find,
which was
to work harder to meet the need.
And they began to not depend on circumstance for food. They began to then track food. They began to move more into a protein diet.
Looking at animals, killing them.
As a source of food. The Neanderthals didn't kill that many. They did on occasion, but it was rare. It was only done in, really, it was done because they had to.
Right.
Literally, you know.
Our popular images of Neanderthals clubbing animals is actually erroneous.
It's Cro-Magnon.
I don't know if they say Neanderthal technically did it in fine knowledge.
Yeah, but the Neanderthals were
body. Yeah.
But the Neanderthals were brutish because that was the way it was.
Yeah.
And vicious because they didn't matter anyway. But they didn't have the seeds of success within themselves, even though they led to the Cro-Magnons. The Neanderthals died out because
they were left behind. In a sense, back in their thing.
Genetically left behind.
Well, they died out because they starved to death or something? Probably climate change.
They couldn't adapt.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Cro-Magnons, because they were forced into wider territories, had to adapt. And they had the means to adapt because they could eat better.
And they could think about what to do about their problem.
Kill, eat.
The Neanderthals had any kind of tools.
They had throwing stones.
They were throwing
stones and sticks.
Yeah, they would throw a hit.
Oh, they stones. Anything would throw because they did extend their reach.
Yeah.
You know, throwing is extending the reach.
But then Cro-Magnon men started to shake things.
Oh, he started to shake things. Then he began to realize not only the throw he could drop, and, drop things out of a tree. You take a rock off a tree and drop it. You got something. You know, you can use gravity is that point of view. You don't have to throw, you can rock something.
So they got the path of least resistance, you know, that physics principle. They had slack, they could do less effort and accomplish more. Yeah.
One of the things about diet, you have got a very interesting thing, is that because their diet changed, they had more than enough energy. They could extend energy because they had more energy to do more than just survive it. They could survive, eat, and have energy left to do certain, sometimes simple projects. So they weren't spending as much of their day in eating.
Which the Neanderthals were.
I was looking at a great ape. And the great ape was there, and he was nibbling almost all day.
But the great ape was not a Neanderthal.
No, great ape is not a Neanderthal. That's what we have. We have, gorillas, great gibbons and all those things. They spend a lot of time sitting in one place. I mean, food. You don't have enough food. You literally do stick very close to your food source.
And so you see how the Neanderthals developed over that great ape.
They just didn't have the survival. But what is strange is, I don't know how, but there's two things that I know are going to be found. They found that, possibly, they're talking about Jurassic Park, in which they found some DNA. Well, since the making of the movie, they have found some DNA.
Yeah, I think I've heard that. Yeah.
Now, there's three things here. One is that we're going to find some DNA of the early Neanderthals and Cro-Magnons. We're going to find it. State that as a fact. It's difficult, but we're going to find it. And the other one is that somewhere in our DNA, as now, there are instructions that are partly Neanderthal and partly Cro-Magnon.
What do you mean by that? That
information that was Cro-Magnon, which was Neanderthal, and which bred Neanderthals, was the dominant chunk of the DNA, it's still there. It's no longer dominant. food inside us. And that's one of the areas I think it could be extremely exciting across the next several years, is realizing what all of these chunks of the DNA are there for, because a lot of the stuff on a normal DNA strand is not used. And we look at it and we say, well, that's junk. We know it isn't. It's information of the entire history of ourselves as beings on this planet. Entire history.
Okay, that's it. Oh, well, here, the instrument, did you see the being holding the instrument, or you just saw this light instrument?
It was like, I wasn't concentrating so much on them.
And why would you say it's not a machine? Since
Oh, wow.
Okay, now when we were asking for the